Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Cinema Specialists are back with our second episode of October. If you missed our coverage of the 10 most underrated horror movies of all time, make sure you go check out that episode. Today, we are talking about the 10 best non-English horror movies ever. And John and I are going to be ripping through this. We were going to go international, but then we were like, okay, does that open the door to Britain? Does that open the door? Technically, it's like Canada is international to me. So it's like, that was too difficult. So we decided we just landed on non-English. We said with our top 10 underrated horror movies that we couldn't include any non-English movies for the reason that we were doing this podcast. Because otherwise it was just going to be a lot of repetition and that was going to be annoying. So we didn't do that. We didn't, for the first time with our two podcasts, whether it was Island Movies or this, we didn't have to say, does this one count? Because if it's in a different language, it counts other than English. And if it's a silent movie, we also counted those based on where it was from originally. Mm-hmm. So because I highly doubt when they're making the cabinet of Dr. Caligari that they were running around talking how John and I are talking in this moment. So that is a German movie. It is a German movie. So anyway, here we are. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, leave us some comments. It's fun to read everybody's lists as we go through. I enjoy seeing them. And, you know, let us know over in the comments here in the live chat what you're thinking as we get rolling with all of this. So, John, criteria this time, they just don't speak English, right? Easy?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's quite easy. I did ask you one question about one movie, but it definitely counts, so it's fine. And I'll explain that more when we finally do get to it, which won't be for a while. But yeah, I mean, essentially, the biggest thing I tried to do is I did try to diversify where the movies on my list were from. Mm-hmm. So in total, I have 8 different countries represented out of my 10 movies, which I think is like decent. But also, yeah. Just knowing that there's still a lot of international horror movies and non-English horror movies I haven't watched.
I mean, there's so many. I was looking at that too, and I was like, man, there's some classics that I haven't seen also.
That's kind of how I felt going through it all. And I was like, I realized that I have there are certain regions that I have a big blind spot for my primarily like Latin American movies. That are horror movies. I've watched a couple and that's about it. And like most of them are by like Guillermo del Toro.
I mean, the thing is though, we were talking about this and we already pre-recorded our Pulse episode, which is going to be one of John's movies tonight. We already pre-recorded that episode and we were talking about it when it comes to like horror. A lot of times the things you find scary are kind of where you're from. Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking about like expansionism and stuff like that. Like you're scared of what your culture is scared of. So, you know, ghosts aren't going to scare me as much as a serial killer in the deserts of Texas, because I've driven through the deserts of Texas. And that's why a movie like Nocturnal Animals, which isn't really a horror movie, I find to be terrifying, because that's the type of shit you're worried about when you're driving around these really dusty, weird roads and you don't know where you are. Most people in the middle of the country are very normal people, but every now and then you get somebody like the Toy Box Killer or something like that, which if you don't know who the hell that is, look that up. It's one of the most disturbing things you'll ever read in your life. If you start looking into some of that stuff, it's a little bit creepier. So, you know, we'll see as we get into these international movies, what we find scary, and what we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. I think we're going to, we haven't shared our list with each other.
We haven't.
So not sure what's on yours. I think what we will find is a lot of our movies, because these are non-English movies, they are coming, and a lot of them come from like Europe and Asia. We're going to find a lot of ghosts, I think, in these movies. And I think that's something that we don't see a lot in American movies, because North America is just so new. And I think the idea of ghosts doesn't hit as hard as it does in other regions of the world.
Ghosts used to be scarier.
They did.
That's really what it comes down to. Like, right? Like, I feel like old horror movies in America liked to get into ghost stories. I think we saw them so much. And I also think that America becoming a less religious country also impacts that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think people really think about afterlife as much as they used to. And so it's not as creepy to people. But all right, I'm excited to see your list. You don't know anything on mine except for The Orphanage, obviously. And I know Pulse is on yours. Is that all we know?
I have some assumptions of what is on yours, mainly because I saw the thumbnail for this movie and I know one of them isn't on my list. So it has to be on your list. And
oh, no. Wait, which one is that? Let me see. Boop, boop.
And oh, then... yeah.
No. It's not Let the Right One In.
No. And I, again, figured that Let the Right One In is also on your list already. So,
yeah, I would hope.
That's it.
All right.
Well, see what we've got.
Let's get rid of the drama right off the bat, John. Because when Austin made this, he must have been like, I just want to take Phil's number 10. Good Night, Mommy.
It's a good one.
Have you seen Good Night, Mommy?
I watched it last week. I watched it in preparation for this because I was like, this is one of those ones that people talk about a lot. I need to give it a watch. Well, this movie was not quite what I thought it was going to be.
It's a weird movie. Like, I really enjoy this movie. So I'm going to read the synopsis here off of this is from Letterboxd. In the heat of the summer lays a lonesome house in the countryside where 9-year-old twin brothers await their mother's return. When she comes home bandaged after cosmetic surgery, nothing is like before, and the children start to doubt whether this woman is actually who she says she is. Movie is downright creepy, and these kids are so good in this movie. That's what's funny. A lot of my movies on this list, not a lot, but a couple of them, have children actors, and we talk a lot about how bad children actors can make or break a movie. The kids in this movie, the Schwartz brothers, like they're actual twins, they are so good. And this is just a damn entertaining movie that, yeah, I just really, really, really enjoy watching. The entire time you kind of start questioning along with them. You're like, is she their mom? Like, it is, like, what's going on here? And then they tried to remake this with Naomi Watts and it was a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, Naomi Watts can only make so many American remakes of German movies that hit, you know.
I know. Funny. Did Funny Games hit? Did people like Funny Games in America, the American version?
I don't know. It's the same movie.
Yeah, so, it is essentially just a shot-for-shot remake.
Shot-for-shot remake with the same director. You can only strike lightning so many times. I find that Goodnight Mommy was one of those ones where, again, I go in knowing like the concept of it, right? Like the tagline description that you just gave there. Mm-hmm. And as this movie evolves, it gets so much more horrifying than you think it is going to.
And that's what I really like about it. It just keeps getting darker.
Yes. And I was pretty sure I knew some revelations that occur in this movie going into it, that I've like picked it up through osmosis at some point, either watching other movie lists or whatever, like explaining it. I was pretty sure I knew where the movie was going, but even that honestly did not ruin the watch value of this movie at all, because there were things in this movie that I did not expect still, even knowing like the, what you wouldn't consider like the primary twist of the soap.
Yeah. Well, we won't spoil it.
No, I don't want to spoil this. Everyone should watch it. In all honesty, it's a good one. It's creepy. I personally think the scariest thing in this entire movie, though, is when two people from the Red Cross enter into a house without someone opening the door for them. That's just me, though.
That's just you. Okay. Thanks, John. Thanks for that. So anyway, what is your number 10?
I have a deep cut with my number 10. It is the very rare Soviet horror film, 1967's Vli, by Konstantin Ershov and Georgi.
What's it called?
It's called Vli. It's spelled V-I-Y, if we're looking at English. The thing is that it uses a letter in the Russian alphabet that doesn't exist in English.
Okay.
This is based on Ukrainian folktale, written by Gogol, popularized by Gogol, and it is about a man who is tasked with guarding the body of a witch for 3 days in this old church. And it's not the scariest film. It's not, even if you look at like the rating for this movie's rated G now. So it's kind of weird to say that this is one of my favorite non-English horror movies, but it's so different than any other horror movie you're ever going to watch. It feels creepy. It has this escalating thing where things kind of get crazier the more nights that pass. And it's horrifying in a way that only like this like Eastern European folk horror can really hit. It doesn't, It's again like ghosty, creepy. There's some fantastic, like, this is fantastic visual effects of this movie that, like, yes, they feel dated because the movie's from 1967, but they work so well. And the movie's really compelling. It's so nice seeing, and again, because there are so many different regions you can watch these horror movies from, the Soviet Union doesn't have a lot. If you could probably count the number of Soviet horror movies on two hands.
I've never heard of this movie. I'm interested. I would watch this one. It's short too. Good to know. It's only 76 minutes.
Yeah.
I love a 76 minute movie, John.
Almost all of my movies on my list are available on Canopy.
Okay, that's good to know. I will definitely try to check, especially with how short this is. I'll definitely try to check this one out. You have me hooked. And then I see the first line of Steve's review is three nights of an asshole of a protagonist locked in a church with a witch.
It's a really fun movie. It's so different than what you expect because, I mean, it's all set up there and it gets really insane towards the end. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, why don't you do your number nine now? We'll alternate back and forth between the two of them. I just had to update my top 50 horror movies list, John. I didn't even realize. Wow. I have to delete Frailty off the list.
Oh, my. Well, there you go. So number nine is kind of the point of contention. And I don't know how Phil's going to respond to this one. But it felt disingenuous to talk about non-English horror movies without talking about the giallo genre. Which meant that I had to find one that wasn't like officially originally in English, but I did go with a more classic one, and I went with 1975's Deep Red, Profondo Rosso, by Dario Argento, like the master of giallo. It felt disingenuous for us to be talking about these type of movies without some inclusion of this Italian horror master on there.
Why don't you explain what giallo is to everybody here? And I swear I know what you're talking about.
So giallo is this, it's a very like hyper graphic, kind of like a slasher craze that happened in Italy with their horror movies and everything. And it's named after the like yellow cover that these like pulp novels would get that a lot of giallo is named at or based on. Mm-hmm. The thing is like this is Italian cinema, and we've kind of talked about this previously when we're talking about like spaghetti westerns and stuff. Italian cinema is often filmed in a way where they put in the audio after it's filmed.
And a lot of times they just put English in. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what you'll see and what you'll notice when you're watching this type of movie is you will see that the actors and the like lines aren't matching up because everyone on screen is kind of speaking their own native language when they're acting. Mm-hmm. You have some people who are speaking English, you have some people speaking Italian, sometimes you have Germans in there. Like you have all of these different people talking in their own languages, and they just put on like a dub track afterwards. And the reason why I ended up going with Deep Red instead of like Suspiria, which is arguably one of the best horror movies ever made, and what Dario Argento's most popular movie is because that one was specifically made for the English release, and Deep Red was made for an Italian release. So despite the fact that you have American actors in this as the lead roles, this was still a movie that was made for Italian audiences. And what this is this very interesting mystery. And again, it goes into these like slasher ideas of like, who is the killer? And trying to find the killer. It follows this jazz pianist who happens to be around when this murder happens. And he's just gets invested in it. And he starts trying to solve it and figure it out. And it does all of these things. There's a creepy puppet at one point. There are some phenomenal kills. And when you get to the end of the movie and you find out who the killer is, it's one of those moments of, how did I not figure that out?
That sounds like you got me hooked, John. Look at this. You're already, even if nobody else cares about this podcast, you've already convinced me of two movies that I should watch now.
Perfect. That's all I'm here for.
I guess that's what you're here for, right? I mean, but then again, you did convince me on Pulse, and we'll get there in a bit. Anyway, my turn. One of the most disgusting movies ever made. Raw. Now, I know that Raw, the thing with Raw is, I know that this was like a little bit more popular when it came out, so I'm sure some people have kind of seen it, but this one's a good one, and I just think that this one is so damn entertaining. A vegetarian, what is the plot follows a vegetarian's first year at veterinary school where she tastes meat for the first time and develops a craving for human flesh. It's not the human flesh part that gets me in this movie. It's the part, there's one scene, have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so this movie's great. There's a scene in this movie where she takes a chicken breast out of the refrigerator and licks it raw. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, anybody who's ever, whether purposefully or accidentally, taken a bite of raw chicken, just handling raw chicken is disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she just takes it out and takes a lick of it. And that shot has been so burned into my brain. And essentially what ends up happening is she gets hazed during veterinary school. And even though she's a vegetarian, she literally just develops a taste for meat. And it, like, it gets into her being a cannibal, but that's not the stuff that freaks me out in this movie. Like this, like I said, the stuff that freaks me out in this movie is the stuff that I, as she's doing it, can go, no, 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 why you do, don't do that, 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 don't do that. I love it. I don't have a lot to say about this one because it actually has been a little bit since I've seen it. So I don't feel like I could talk like so much about it without kind of spoiling it. But when this came out in 2016 at Cannes. And it really did like catch a lot of people by surprise because this was, I mean, 2016 is kind of when vegetarianism, is it an ism, started to become a little bit more popular in the United States. Really, that was when you started to get a lot of these documentaries and stuff and people started to latch onto it a little bit more. Wild, 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 wild movie. Here you go, Michael Wilde. Can't wait to name drop all these to my friends tomorrow and act like I'm better than them when they don't recognize any. They might recognize Raw. I seriously think they might recognize Raw.
Yeah, this has been one that's been on my radar for a while. It pops up on like top horror movie lists quite a bit. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Sometimes it's really hard. The interesting thing with these movies that we're discussing now and why like non-English horror movies is so fascinating is because, and we talk about this with our underrated horror movies, horror movies tend to be shorter.
Yeah. They this tend is only to be an shorter. Hour 40, I think, something like that.
Some of these are a little longer. Like some of these get in that 2 hour range. However, it's so easy to throw on a horror movie. And sometimes it's hard watching a non-English movie because you just don't have the time for it, right? It's not one of those things that you can throw on while you're doing other things around the house or anything like that. You have to actually be invested so you know what's going on because as you're reading the subtitles and everything. So it's been on my list. I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but it's definitely one I'm intending to check out because it is spoken of so highly.
Yeah. And there's another scene in this where she scratches a rash. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the sound design in the movie as she is scratching the rash is like, I'm literally like, if you could see my hand right now, like I'm not making this weird knuckle. I'm like cringing. Like it's disgusting. This was directed and written by Julia Ducournau. I don't actually know how you say her name, but she's only made one movie since.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because this was a hit. Mm-hmm. This was a hit. So yeah, who was my first movie? We said we were going to name the director. So far you have,
your Goodnight Mommy first.
Yeah, I know. Who directed the original Goodnight Mommy? The original Goodnight Mommy was directed by Severina Viala and Veronica Franz. Look at me, or Severine Viala and Veronica Franz. So it was a duo. Severine Viala.
I think actually this is also did, on the topic. I think we're it's interesting when we look at a lot of non-English horror movies because there are a lot of predominant female directors with like highly praised movies in the subcategory that we have determined, which is really cool. Because it's always fun to celebrate female directors because especially when they make some phenomenal films.
It's just funny how so many of them don't end up doing a second one. Like they'll have a successful one and they don't make a second one. It took her 5 years to make her next movie, Titan, T-I-T-A-N-E. That was her second movie.
Titan, which was also like very well received.
Oh, so did you see it or no?
I haven't seen it. I've just heard praise for that movie.
Okay.
Kind of similar, from what I understand, it's a bit similar to Cronenberg's Crash.
Okay.
If you know what that movie's about, then you might have an idea what Titan's about.
All right, let's keep moving on. So I'll go to my number eight. This is one that I almost left off my list. It's a horror movie, but it's not scary. But it's just such a good story. That like when I'm looking at movies, I'm like, I have to put this on there if I'm being real. And that's The Devil's Backbone. The Devil's Backbone is, sorry, I'm like typing 40 different things. 2001, what do you call it? Guillermo del Toro movie. And it's so typical of Guillermo del Toro. Like, it is just everything you expect from Guillermo del Toro at this point, where, again, I'm just reading the taglines because I feel like it's good for everybody, because a lot of people probably haven't actually heard of these movies. After Carlos, a 12-year-old whose father has died in the Spanish Civil War, arrives at an ominous boys' orphanage, he discovers the school is haunted and has many dark secrets which he must uncover. And what's so fascinating about this, like, I just read that to you. That sounds like Pan's Labyrinth, and that sounds like The Orphanage.
Yep.
And his hands are all over both of those movies. So you get Guillermo del Toro in a creepy house and magic happens. That's what you want. And so this is one of those movies, you know, Spanish Civil War, that's exactly what's going on in Pan's Labyrinth. And it gets into child horror.
Yeah.
And that there's some creepy moments in this movie. But to me, it's the story more than anything that sets it up. It's a super stylized, it's exactly what you'd expect from Guillermo del Toro. Like, let's be real. Mm-hmm. But it's super stylized, and it's just a really, really, really good story. And, it, you know, when I get to The Orphanage eventually, because we already talked about The Orphanage on our Patreon last week for the people who are $5 patrons, you know, sometimes story is what you need in these movies more than scares. And this movie has enough scares to classify it as a horror, but, you know, I did almost leave it off because it's very, like, it's, I don't even know how to describe it, but, like, it's just, it's a ghost story, but the ghosts, it's kind of like your Pulse movie. Like, the ghosts aren't really the most terrifying things you're ever going to encounter. Well, so
I actually haven't seen this one. It's been really hard to come across in Canada for some reason. Okay. I haven't been able to find it, and it has been on my list of movies to watch for quite a while. But from my understanding, it's more of a war drama than it is anything, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, I guess that's a fair way to put it, is it is more of a war drama, and that's kind of how Pan's Labyrinth is, it, right? But this one is, like, it is classified as a horror movie because it is a ghost story. So even though it is more of a war movie, like, the tagline for the movie is, "What is a ghost?"
Yeah.
And it has a creepy little kid in it, you know, but it's just, it's, I don't know, like, what Guillermo del Toro does so well too is he takes these, you know, beautiful looking movies, and then he always has, like, a really gross, disgusting, violent moment in it.
Yeah.
And this has that too. Mm-hmm. So while it is a war drama, there's more to it than it just being a war drama. So it ends up here at number 8 on my list.
Yeah. I definitely need to give it a shot. I'm not the biggest Guillermo del Toro fan. I find his movies are, like, very predictable and very, like, samey. But I definitely need to give it a watch. This is, again, one that seems a lot of praise in both, like, international horror lists as well as just, like, general horror lists. This often finds its way pretty close to the top of those lists.
Yeah, it's a good one. And like I said, I probably would have had it higher if out of these movies that I'm listing here, it might be better than some of these other movies, but as a horror, it doesn't really land there. So what do you have at 8?
At 8, I have A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Dude, I haven't seen that yet. And I wanted to watch it before we did this podcast, 'cause I would have ended up having it. I'm so aggravated that I didn't watch it in time.
Yeah. This is by Anna Lily Amirpour. This is again, like, a rare...
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, right?
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. This is a rare Iranian horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a little more representation there. I mean, this is the tagline for the movie. In the Iranian ghost town Bad City, a place that reeks of death and loneliness, the townspeople are unaware they're being stalked by a lonesome vampire. Yeah. This is a vampire movie. It is a phenomenal vampire movie. Stylistically, unlike anything you've ever seen. It feels so beautiful. It looks so beautiful. It feels, you can really feel this loneliness of this vampire in this city as they're different than everyone and they, like, try to have connections. And I am now realizing I talk about a lot of movies with loneliness. But that is what this movie is. And the performance by Sheila Bond in this film is phenomenal. There's just something about the transformation of this seemingly meek girl into this, like, very powerful vampire in this film. I was meaning to watch it again It's been a little while since I've watched it. I was meaning to watch it again this week, but ran out of time, and apparently my canopy doesn't work on my TV anymore.
Oh no.
So that's the real horror that I'm experiencing right now. But it is so fantastic. It's so different than what we're used to with these vampire movies. Vampire movies tend to focus a lot on like this loss of innocence, whereas this one really kind of focuses on this like pursuit deeper of innocence.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always wanted to see this. This came out right after I graduated from college. So when I was back in New Jersey, our theaters weren't playing it. If I was still at Miami, I would have seen it. And then it's always been on my radar every Halloween season. And this Halloween season, I've had no time to watch anything. So I've done no new movies this time. I got pretty much all of mine out of the way in September. And then my October has been a nightmare. But yeah, this is a movie I will watch at some point. And I'm very happy you brought it up on this podcast because it was all the rage when it came out.
Yeah, and rightfully so. It's very good. There's a discussion in our Discord right now as every day we're kind of listing our favorite like subgenre horror movies right now. And yesterday's was Vampire, and I couldn't say favorite vampire because I have a couple of vampire movies on this list. And this is definitely one in contention for one of my favorite vampire movies of all time.
Mm-hmm. What's your number seven?
My number seven is A Tale of Two Sisters from 2003. It's a Korean film by Kim Ji-woon, same director who did I Saw the Devil. If you've seen that one.
That means nothing to me.
This is, well, I guess we're reading taglines. After being institutionalized in a mental hospital, Su-mi reunites with her sister Su-yun, and they return to live at their country home, but strange events plague the house, leading to surprising revelations and a shocking conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ghost movie. It's another ghost movie, and it's a very stylistic film. It has some really creepy moments. It has this big revelation in the film that kind of like breaks down everything you've been thinking about the entire time. It's kind of hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it, so I have to be a bit vague here. But you start this movie seeing one of the sisters come home from a mental institute. And you're like, I have no idea what's going on. And then you find out that her father is remarried and there's ghosts. There's some creepy ghosts of their mother in the house. So it's spooky. It's creepy. It's eerie. There's a phenomenal scene. The dinner scene in this movie is, we talk about dinner scenes a lot on this podcast. This is another film that has a phenomenal dinner scene.
Yeah, I've never heard of this one. Cool poster, though.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's based on a Korean folktale. So it feels so unsettling watching it. And as you're watching it, it's creepy. It's odd. It's just different. And again, like that's kind of the nice thing about these non-English films and watching these films from so many different countries. There are so many different things that they find scary. And this one, this is essentially a haunted house movie, but it feels so different from like an English haunted house movie or even like the European haunted house movies that we're going to end up talking about. It just feels different the way it's presented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'll definitely want to check. I mean, so far you're pretty much on the money where I want to check them all out. So good job.
Woo.
All right, let me get into, so I'm at eight, right?
You're at number seven.
I'm at seven. Okay. Yeah. I'm typing them in. I'm looking up your movies. I'm looking up mine. So my number seven, this is a pretty polarizing movie. It was a little bit easier to access for people because it was on Netflix for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it was actually released on Netflix in Spain or something, or it's The Platform. And so this movie is as on the nose as you could ever imagine. Right. Like, so the premise of this movie, a slab of food descends down a vertical facility. The residents above eat heartily, leaving those below starving and desperate. A rebellion is imminent. OK, super basic. I get it. Like, it's a very on the nose. The rich keep staying rich and the poor lose everything. And so what it is they're essentially in this like jail where there's a platform in the middle that just keeps coming down. And there's a huge hole in the middle of these rooms where if you want to kill yourself, you can just jump through it. And so as the food descends, there's less available as it gets down to the bottom. Again, very on the nose. But I think this movie is super, super effective. It grossed me out big time. It has a lot of those moments that just make you feel sick to your stomach. You start to see like how people are. The very end of the movie, I found to be very silly. But everything up until the very end, and I'm talking like the last like 3 minutes, everything before that I thought was very effective. And I was super entertained by it. I thought it was a compelling, it was told in a compelling way. And I know sometimes it's like, okay, you're hitting me over the head with this. I was into it the entire time. And it does leave you kind of with that, like, oh man, like they don't know what food they're getting today. They don't know if they're going to get any food today. What's the lowest level you've ever been on? How many levels are there? We don't know. You know, if you're up at the top, you just get to eat, eat, eat. So it's a pretty interesting concept. And it's a simple story, again, a little bit on the nose, but very, very entertaining. So I have it up here as number 7.
I recently heard about this one. I don't know if you told us that, mentioned it to me, or someone else mentioned it to me in the last couple of weeks, but it definitely sounds like the type of premise that a movie that I really want to watch. It sounds interesting. I assume it's more of like a character-based horror film than anything else.
Yeah, you follow the same two characters as they, like, or it's the main guy. He keeps getting like pushed around, because then after like 30 days or something like that, they get moved to another level, and you don't know what level you're going to get moved to after those 30 days.
Interesting. Yeah, this sounds really compelling. I definitely need to give this a watch at some point.
Yeah, his name is Galder Gastello Urrutia. I probably butchered that, but I'm trying to say the names of everybody. And I even said to John beforehand, I said, there's going to be some names that I'm going to butcher. And there was the one. But that's the guy who directed it.
And so, in Spanish, you said?
Spanish, yeah. We have, so Trav Herod says Train to Busan, and Jay Byrne Aquatic also says it. The Conference on Netflix, Train to Busan, As the Gods Will, Doll Master, Reincarnation 2009, The Insight Mill, All of Us Are Show, and Battle Royale, if you count that. Do you count Battle Royale?
I considered it. I ultimately landed on no, but I can definitely see the reasoning as to why it would be considered a horror movie.
Have you seen the Japanese version of Dark Water?
No, it was one I was meaning to get to, but I didn't get to in the last couple of weeks. Train to Busan was actually another one that I haven't gotten around to yet. And I was like, oh, whatever. It's on Amazon. I'll watch it. They took it off Amazon this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen Train to Busan, which is kind of like, that's like one of my glaring, I feel like, blind spots of new horror.
Me too.
Like, people talk about that movie all the time.
Yeah. I was going to watch it, and then all of a sudden it wasn't there on streaming service. And I was like, well, guess I'm not watching it now.
I saw the American remake of Dark Water, but I never saw the original Dark Water. I've seen the original Ringu. What'd you say?
The Jennifer Connelly one?
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly. I've seen the original Ringu. That movie freaked me out as a kid, the American one, but I don't know. I don't have Ringu on here. So yeah. Some Japanese horror movies need to be remade, some do not, as we'll talk about soon, I'm assuming. But yeah, check out the platform. So then that brings me to my number 6, because I stay up. And this is the simple one, and this is your, oh, like, of course you were going to have that. How can you have this list without that? But how can you have this list without that? And that's Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. How can you have the list without the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari? You can't. You literally can't. And I will say, I'm very excited for the new Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. The old Nosferatu is one of the classics that I'm just like, yeah, whatever. Don't care. Max Schreck is scary looking, and you know, and the creepy stand-up is cool, but that movie never did it for me. The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is sick. It is such an incredible looking movie. What a great story. And it's just so well done. And you sit there and you look and you say to yourself, how have they not remade this in a meaningful way? Like, how have they not, you know, there's so many of those movies, right? Where you're like, how have they not remade this? How have they not remade this? It's very interesting that a movie like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is as popular as it is, like out of all the silent movies, this is probably one of the top 5 most popular silent movies ever.
Yeah.
Because people still watch it. And you're talking like, you have to be Chaplin, Buster Keaton, or this, Harold Lloyd, Harold Lloyd, maybe him, But like, you have to be something like that to have silent movies watch. Like, people don't even go back and watch Silent Hitchcock, which I've watched some of them. Most of them stink. Although The Lodger is quite good, but that's not really a horror movie. But this movie just looks amazing. You see the inspiration that everybody drew from it. It actually is still creepy. And it's not just doing it because it's a creepy looking vampire. Like, it actually is just a creepy movie. Niro Kuru says that the Japanese version of Dark Water is on YouTube.
Fantastic. Anyway, we love it.
That's great to know. Love that. Have you have Caligari on your list, right?
I've never seen this movie.
You've never seen Caligari?
I was going to watch it in the last like week, but you know, I was on vacation. I just didn't have enough time to throw this like 80-minute horror movie into my rotation this week, unfortunately.
Dude, it's so good. So this was directed by Robert Wien. And it is a, let me see if I can find it. I'm on Wikipedia there, so I got to find this. It's like the quintessential German expressionism. It is the quintessential.
I know that. Like, I've seen clips from it. I have an idea about the movie, and it's one that I have been meaning to watch for years and just haven't gotten around. I'm pretty sure it's on Canopy, and then Canopy decided it doesn't like my TV. So
that's crazy, man. So yeah, so here's your, you know, everything. Francis, a young man, recalls in his memory the horrible experiences he and his fiance Jane recently went through. Francis and his friend Alan visit the cabinet of Dr. Caligari, an exhibit where the mysterious doctor shows the somnambulist Caesar and awakens him for some moments from his death-like sleep. Like, Tim Burton wouldn't have been allowed to be born if this movie,
if this movie wasn't made.
Parents wouldn't have met if this movie didn't exist. It's just incredible. It really is. It's so incredible. First twist ending ever in a movie. Like, it is credited as the first twist ending ever. 1920, so I mean, you're talking early. Was the oldest movie I'd ever seen for a period of time. They made this movie for $12,371, just to put that in.
It's a lot of money back then,
and it only made 4,000 something, but it's just crazy, right? Like, $12,000. I mean, but that's when people were making $5 a week.
They were probably making less than that in all honesty in 1920, but this is, like you said, this is the movie that when people talk about silent era films, this is one of them that gets talked about. I didn't end up with any of the silent era horror movies on my list. I did get a chance to watch Nosferatu. I didn't get a chance to watch The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I didn't get a chance to watch Hacksaw either, which is also supposed to be very good. And I really do need to get to it because it is a blind spot in my horror watching. But The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is it's one of those ones that it doesn't matter how far away we've gotten from it. People, like, this movie's over 100 years old, and people still talk about it as one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
It's ridiculous, man. It doesn't age. Like, it really does not age. 104 years old as we sit here and talk about it. Speaking of, do you know what the oldest movie you've ever seen is?
I saw The Great Train Robbery.
Okay, but that, like, the oldest feature, like, I'm talking like long, oldest, like 70 plus minute movie.
I'd have to double check, but not like,
yeah, I watched the Inferno or whatever, Dante's Inferno, the one from literally like 1911. It is credited right now as being the oldest existing movie.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's very weird though. When you start to watch movies, you're like, wow, it's 113 years old. And then you realize in like 10 years, we're going to be talking about movies that like we all watch a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like The Wizard of Oz is 85.
Yeah.
So it's kind of wild that we're getting to that point. But anyway, it's over 100 years old. It's a masterpiece and it deserves all the credit it gets. And that's why it keeps getting credit. So yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. You're up with your number six.
Number six is a movie that's inevitably going to be on Phil's list. It is 2007's The Orphanage by J.A. Bayona. I hadn't seen it until we watched it for the Patreon a couple weeks ago. This, again, it's another movie that was like on my list for a long time, never got around to it. This was one of those like, oh my God, this movie. I'm surprised I wasn't the one who suggested this movie because it is like, just like pure nihilism and depression. It's the type of movie that you would see made posting, which is probably why it ends up on my list. This movie is something else, but I'm sure we'll save the majority of our conversation for when it inevitably ends up on your list.
Yeah, I mean, I had John do this one. We did this for our $5 patrons last week. And we talk, you know, every Tuesday we do a full half hour. We talk about a movie. We're going to be doing It Follows next week. But yeah, The Orphanage is just, it's just such a phenomenal, again, it's the story, it's the story, it's the story. And it has its creepy moments, but it's the story more than anything. And I always say a good horror movie has to end on a negative note. So yep. Far, I don't have a single movie on my list here that ends on a positive note. They can't end on positive. Even The Silence of the Lambs, they catch Buffalo Bill. And what's the last thing you hear in that movie? I had to see an old friend about dinner or whatever the hell he says.
An old friend for dinner. I'm having an old friend for dinner.
I'm having an old friend for dinner. That's the line. Thank you. I'm having an old friend for dinner. Because Hannibal Lecter's still on the loose and he's going to go kill people. Okay. Like, you have to end on a negative note to be a good horror movie. And The Orphanage finds that balance more perfectly than any other horror movie, I think, like, ever. Like, yep. It somehow manages to give the characters everything they want in the most depressing way imaginable.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. We'll talk about it soon. I don't have it yet.
Yeah. This is one that definitely watch it before you listen to our Patreon coverage of it, because we have to spoil everything about this movie in order to properly talk about it.
It's really hard. It's a really hard one not to spoil. What do you have at five?
Number five. It's actually very funny that you mentioned something similar to this movie. I have Nosferatu the Vampire. Pyre is spelled P-Y-R-E, just so we're clear.
Okay.
From 1979. This is the Werner Herzog remake of Nosferatu, a German film.
Whoa. I've never seen it.
This is a beautiful film. It is stunning what Werner Herzog does with this film. It honestly might be the most beautiful horror movie I've ever seen. And it has, I don't know if I have to talk about like the plot for Nosferatu. It's the Dracula story.
And Isabella Gianni. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This is quite the film. It's so, so well done. It is phenomenal. It takes the Dracula story, and for anyone who hasn't watched the original Nosferatu and doesn't know, it is the Dracula story, but it has to be kind of tweaked because they couldn't get the licensing for Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Just because,
but they call him Dracula in this movie, do they not?
They do, because at this point, if I'm not mistaken, the copyright expired for Dracula.
Love that.
So it is not quite the Dracula story, but it's a lot more the Dracula story than the original Nosferatu is. It still has the Nosferatu aspect of it. It still has Dracula coming over, but it has all, instead of being like these like randomly named characters, it's all the characters from the Dracula novels. You have your Jonathan Harker, you have your Lucy Harker, you have Renfield, you have Van Helsing. Like, all these people are in this movie now, and they're all playing these characters that are in the original Nosferatu. But now it makes a little more sense as to what's going on. There's a big emphasis on the plague in this movie and what's happening with the plague, people dying and everything like that. Klaus Kinski's Dracula is horrifying. It's terrifying. The scene, very
famous. He's one of those underrated actors, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's a scene at the very, like, towards the beginning of this movie when Jonathan comes into Castle Dracula and he cuts his finger. It's in the original movie too, and Dracula just like sucks on the edge of his finger, and it is so horrifying. It's so terrifying. There's a lot more emphasis on like sickness and illness in this, but the thing that I think really elevates this so much above the original, other than the fact that, I mean, it's made 50 years later, it is just, you know, it has the upside of having better technology and phenomenal director behind it, shooting it wonderfully. There is so much emphasis on Lucy Harker as a character in this movie. And we talked about Isabella Gianni literally the last time we were talking about this, when we were talking about Possession.
Yeah.
Phenomenal actor. She is so strong in this role. She plays it so well. She brings this like real innocence to this movie. And I think this is one that people kind of forgo, because when they talk Nosferatu, they usually go back to the original. With Egger's Nosferatu coming out on Christmas this year, give this one a watch first. because I'm sure you're going to see a lot of influence from this version of it in this new version of this movie.
Yeah, I'll definitely check this out. I mean, Klaus Kinski, for anybody who like doesn't know who that is, he's so underrated. He did A Queer the Wrath of God for a few dollars more, The Great Silence, and God Said to Cain. Like, he did a lot of Westerns and other movies. And his big American role was Dr. Zhivago, which Dr. Zhivago has kind of fallen out of favor. Like, it's not that people don't like that movie, but The Bridge on the River Kwai and Lawrence of Arabia have kind of overtaken Dr. Zhivago as the masterpieces of David Lean. So I think a lot of people like don't really know Klaus Kinski, and he's so good as an actor. And I actually didn't realize that he was Nosferatu in this, and that makes me want to watch. And then Bruno Ganz as Jonathan Harker, who plays Hitler in Downfall, which is an insane performance. So yeah, I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's one that I think people really overlook. It doesn't get mentioned that much, but it is very much worth the watch. It is very stylistic. It is gorgeous and harrowing the way that Herzog just presents this world.
And then did Herzog also did do A Queer the Wrath of God. So yeah. Anyway. All right. My number five, finally. Yay me. My turn. I have the original Funny Games.
No.
Have you seen the original Funny Games?
I haven't seen either version of the movie.
So it's funny about it is Michael Haneke, he directed both.
Oh, yeah.
So he essentially did a shot-for-shot remake and did both. But this movie is one of the most disturbing movies I've ever watched in my entire life. And the sick part about it is there's actually times where you laugh because the ridiculousness is just so over the top. So the tagline for this movie is simply a nightmare. And then it says two psychotic young men take a mother, father, and son hostage in their vacation cabin and force them to play sadistic games with one another for their own amusement. This movie does not have a moment of joy in it. Like I said, you will laugh at times because it's so absurd how far it goes. It has a couple of the most disturbing scenes and sequences you will ever see in your entire life. There is one moment with a car that will haunt you for your entire life. I can't even like, I don't want to talk about it because it would spoil the movie, but there's a scene with a car where a character is forced to make a decision and it'll haunt you forever. And this has one of the most FU endings I've ever seen in a horror movie. It's so unbelievably disturbing and it never stops being disturbing. And it's you have to watch it and know that you're just going to be unsettled the entire time. Because these two people are just absolute monsters.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Again, it's one that's been on my list for a long time, but it's been a little hard to find. I think it might be on Canopy.
I got it from the library when I got it.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's one that I definitely need to get around to. It's highly regarded. And the fact that there is an American remake that Michael Haneke made himself, and it is shot for shot the same movie, mm-hmm. and still considered good, but isn't as good as the original.
Yeah.
Really just kind of speaks to the level that this movie is a classic of the genre.
It's great, man. Like, it's great. It's, I don't normally, like, if you notice on my list, even when we did the other horror, I don't really have other humans as villains horror movies on my list. Like, those aren't the types of movies that I go for. Like, even when I look at my top 50 horror movie list, Psycho, yeah, Norman Bates. Okay, Rosemary's Baby, The Shining, it's more of The House, Alien, The Exorcist, Jaws, like The Thing, The Descent. It's not really, I don't really go for slasher movies. Those don't scare me. This movie is horrifying. It's absolutely batshit and brutal.
Would you say this is the best home invasion movie?
Yes. Yes, let me make sure on my list here, I can make sure I say yes on that. But I have a hard time thinking of anything that even comes close. Yeah, I think it's the only, I'm looking at my top 50, that's the only home invasion movie I have in my top 50 horror movies. Mm.
Yeah, that's saying something.
Yeah, so home invasion movies don't really do it for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
This one does. This movie's brutal. And you'll feel like a piece of shit when you're like, I enjoyed that movie. Yeah. Okay. And then, so now number four, I have Let the Right One In. You have seen this, right?
We might be talking about it very soon.
Okay, so I'll wait then. I'll wait and we can give all of our thoughts at the same time on that. But I'll just say I have Let the Right One In. I talked about the other day on the last episode how I actually prefer Let Me In to Let the Right One In. But Let the Right One In is a beautiful movie. Really, really, really well made. The moments of absolute violence are gorgeous. Thomas Elfertson did a great job with that one. Really, really makes you not want to go to Sweden. But I'll wait until we get to yours since I have it at number four.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get there soon. Not quite yet, though. My number four, I had to throw it back to kind of a movie that gave us a new wave of appreciation for non-English horror movies. You've actually already mentioned it, but it's 1998's Ringu.
What is it? Oh, Ringu.
It's Ringu. Hideo Nakata, just a, such a well. It's when you watch this movie now, and you see the performances of everyone in this movie, when you watch it and you see the horror that it builds, the mystery revolving around everything. Sadako is such just this like ominous character in this movie. It doesn't make sense that we're seeing this divorced couple have to work together in order to solve the mystery of this. It's no wonder this got the Gore Verbinski remake in 2002 and became such a hit amongst everyone. This movie was everywhere when it came out, and it's truly terrifying. And again, it's Naomi Watts again.
I know. She loves doing remakes.
She loves doing remakes of international horror films.
I know. I haven't seen Ringu in like forever. I don't remember this movie really much at all.
Mm-hmm.
I always found the story of the ring to be so much more compelling than the execution of the ring.
Sure.
The whole VHS aspect of it, you watch this, you have 7 days to die, blah, blah, blah. Her crawling through the TV is one of the most terrifying. That movie messed me up as a child. Her crawling through the TV. Mm-hmm. Like, that messed me up so bad. The old box TV too. Yep. That messed me up. But I always found the story to be so much more interesting. Like the whole well situation and everything like that. It's really, really fascinating. But I have to rewatch this because it's been a long time. And it didn't end up on my top 10 because I remember it didn't blow me away. And again, I think it just comes down to, I always feel like the what's in my head is better than what's executed on the screen.
I really hope a lot more people are revisiting this lately with the kind of the resurgence of Hiroyuki Sanada as an actor after his performance in Shogun, because he deserves it. I mean, we've already spoken praise for him anytime he appears in any movie that we watch. We talked about him with Sunshine and how phenomenal he is in that movie. He's so good in this film. And I feel like we can be a little more spoilery about this. So if you, for some reason, haven't seen... I feel like
most people have seen The Ring, yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't seen either version of this, then, like, you know, skip forward, like, 3 minutes or something.
Yeah.
But this... The ending of this movie, when Ryuji gets killed after they think they solved everything with the well and all that, and there's the realization that the only reason... the only reason that Raikou isn't killed is because she showed it to someone else, and it actually works as like this chain letter that you just have to pass on, is horrifying.
Yeah.
That realization where, because throughout this entire movie, and first off, that entire sequence where Sadako's coming out of the TV at the end of this film is more terrifying because you think that it can't happen.
Yeah.
Because you think they solved everything, you think everything's okay, and it's so scary. And then just the revelation by Riku that she has to have her child kill someone in order for her child to live. It's fascinating. It's so well done. The family aspect of this disjointed, divorced family having to come together in order to solve this so that neither of them die for the betterment of their son and everything like that. It's this interesting story and this family drama that is surrounded by this cursed tape ghost story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta rewatch it. I don't know. I will at some point. The ring, the last thing you see before you die. It's a great idea. I love when horror movies get into backstories like that.
Yeah.
And this one does a good job with it. What do you have at three?
I have to let the right one in.
Okay. So not much further ahead of me at all.
No, not at all. And ultimately, this is my favorite vampire movie of all time. It takes this idea of the vampire as this killing machine, but also this focus on this loss of innocence so well. And what Tomas Alfredson does exceptionally in this film is focuses so much on this relationship between these two children. Just not even like their perceptions of it or anything, but just like this friendship building between these two. When one of them, like Ellie knows that she can't get close to Oscar. Like, because there are dangers associated with it. And as we see it go on, and we get this idea that, you know, Oscar is kind of, in a sense, being groomed to be Ellie's next handler by the end of this movie. It's phenomenal. The scene in the woods, and I think this is really why I prefer this one to the Matt Reeves remake. The scene in the woods in this version is so beautiful. It's so well done.
Which scene in the woods? Aren't there multiple? There's multiple scenes.
The one where Hawken, like the first kill, where Hawken kills the guy in the woods, is so beautifully done. It looks gorgeous. It's just this. It's so white. And what I really prefer about Let the Right One In is how much lighter it is than the Matt Reeves version.
Yeah, Let Me In definitely gets darker. The scene for me, and it's all timer, is the swimming pool scene.
Oh yeah, it's so
the fun. Swimming pool scene is just an absolute all timer of a scene. Yeah. So yeah, that one and honestly the bathtub too.
The
bathtub scene's really good. I mean, this movie's loaded, and I just prefer Let Me In a little bit to Let the Right One In. Like, again, I go back to my, let me go back to my list here of horror movies and see what I got. But I don't have it much further ahead one over the other. I have Let Me In at 27 and Let the Right One In at 38. Yeah. It's not much of a difference at all. But it's just such a beautiful movie. And the acting, again, the child acting in this movie should not be as good. The bullies are ridiculous. They're so good. That scene with the ice is fascinating. Like, it's just good moment after good moment after good moment. And again, another great story. It's not going to make you lose sleep by any means, because at the end of the day, the vampire is actually kind of a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it really focuses on the villains being the other people in the movie, the human characters. But
yeah.
I think one thing we've really noticed going through these lists is that no matter where you are in the world, children are still creepy.
Yeah, exactly. People still don't understand why kids have to be so damn weird. All right. I'm going to my number three. Diabolique. How do you say this?
Diabolique.
Word? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Henry Georges Clouzot. Yeah. This is essentially the OG Psycho. That's what they always kind of refer to it as. It's always kind of referred to as it. The cruel and abusive headmaster of a boarding school, Michel de La Salle, is murdered by an unlikely duo, his meek wife and the mistress he brazenly flaunts. The women become increasingly unhinged by a series of odd occurrences after de La Salle's corpse mysteriously disappears. This movie, again, don't want to spoil it, 1955. It took me forever. This was on my list for so long before I finally sat down and watched it. This movie is, again, one of those unbelievably compelling stories. You're sitting there and you're wondering what's real, what's not, who's in on it, who's not. It has an absolute incredible twist. It just an incredible twist that you're probably not going to see coming. Although if you know there's a twist, you always have a better chance. But it has just an absolute doozy of a twist that is so well executed and so damn awesome to watch. I love this movie. I think it's such a great, great horror movie. And it's more of a suspense than a horror, right? Like, it definitely, it falls more into the Psycho type horror, where I count Psycho as like this, you know, that's my number one scary movie. But Psycho is not the scariest movie I've ever seen. It's a suspense movie with a brilliant story. And that's where Diabolique fits in here. So yeah, this is a must watch. This was on Canopy for a long time. I'm sure it's still there.
This is one that I definitely need to get around to eventually. I haven't, but you convinced me.
And you know what else he directed, right?
No.
The Wages of Fear.
Oh, I do like that movie quite a lot.
And The Wages of Fear was 2 years before Diabolique.
Oh, well, now I'm even more intrigued at this movie, and I'm definitely going to have to watch it.
So the tagline for this, I love looking at taglines for horror movies. See it, be amazed at it, but be quiet about it. The twist is a doozy. Yeah, the twist is a doozy. Anyway, all right, my top two are not going to surprise anybody. So I think I'm probably just going to knock mine out here, John, and then you can do your finals, since one of my movies is The Orphanage. So we all know it's coming. And so what's the point of waiting around? But I do have The Orphanage at number one.
Yeah, I think
so. I think it's the best international horror movie ever made, at least from what I've seen. So I do have it as my number one. My number two is Audition.
I also figured that one was coming too.
Exactly. That's why I just did both of mine right here, because there's no shock. I know you're going to have Pulse as one of yours, so whatever. But I have my Audition poster sitting right over here. I wonder if I can turn this so you guys can see what posters. Hang on. Let's get that light out of here. Can you see the posters there? So I have Audition next to Planet of the Apes next to Porco Rosso. So if that doesn't tell you, you know, that I have something wrong with me, nothing will. But this Audition is so freaking disgusting and so disturbing. And so I saw this movie when I was younger, hadn't seen it for years. I talked about this on one of the podcasts we did a while ago, but they were showing it at a Friday night screening here in Florida. This guy randomly puts on these showings at this theater where he gets like a forgotten horror movie essentially, and we'll throw it on. So he's like, Audition. My sister and I went and saw it. We'd both seen the movie. We hadn't seen it in like a decade. We're in the theater, sold out. Like, this place was packed. And what you could realize through the first hour of the movie was nobody had seen this movie because it started to become very clear as the movie developed that they were starting to be like, when does it get scary? Like, what are we watching? Like, this is like a very basic movie. What's going on here? And then it gets to the final half hour and people in the theater start screaming and like cursing and just out, because it was like a Friday night screening. So you're going to get more of that. Right. But the way people started reacting when shit starts to hit the fan, my sister and I are sitting there laughing because we knew it was coming the entire time, and just waiting for the dread is so unbelievable. The main actress in this movie is so terrifying. What is her name? I don't know which one it is, but whoever she is absolutely terrifying in this movie. And so Takashi Miike, people probably know him from, Itchy the Killer? Icky the Killer?
Itchy the Killer, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it actually. But so here's the synopsis for this one. 7 years after the death of his wife, widower Shigeharu seeks advice on how to find a new wife from a colleague. Taking advantage of their position as a film company, they stage an audition, interviewing a series of women. He is enchanted by the quiet Asami, but soon things take a twisted turn as Asami isn't what she seems to be. Asami is the most terrifying horror villain, like, ever. She is so absolutely horrifying. There is a torture scene in this movie where, as she is putting needles in a person's eyes, she is giggling with glee, making the most disturbing noise you'll ever hear in your entire life. Brilliant movie. Absolutely brilliant. Takes its time to get where it's going, and it's great. And then number one, I have The Orphanage. The Orphanage is a masterpiece. Super depressing, super well-made, beautiful to look at, good old-fashioned haunted house type movie with ghosts, what's real, what's not. We talked about that one on the Patreon. So, you know, if you want to hear that more in depth, go check it out there. But at least you know I love it. Jay Bayona, maybe the most underrated director. I know he went into Jurassic Park, whatever, but I had The Impossible, this, people don't talk about J.A. Bayona. He makes very good movies. And then he did
Society of Snow.
Yeah. Like that was a really good movie. J.A. Bayona is a very talented guy who just, you know, he kind of had to stop making the movies as he started getting bigger. But The Impossible and The Orphanage are masterpieces. But yeah, The Orphanage will leave you feeling depressed. Audition will leave you going, what the fuck did I just watch? So there you go.
So Audition. I've never seen Audition, which might be kind of a surprise. I've never seen this movie. And I intentionally didn't watch it leading up to this because I knew if I had, it would end up on my list. And I didn't want to have as much overlap with you. So I left it off for now. I'm going to watch it before. In the next 10 days, I will end up watching this movie. It's been one that I have been meaning to watch for years. I just haven't gone around to. I know it's uncomfortable. I know it's kind of like one of the progenitors of like the torture porn drama or genre. But it is one that's been on my list for a very long time, and I'm really looking forward to watching it. Takashi Miike is such a phenomenal director. I really enjoy 13 Assassins. I think that movie is phenomenal as like kind of this like homage to Seven Samurai. He's such a great director, so I've been looking forward to this one for a while, and I'm going to have to give it a watch. And again, The Orphanage is classic. Like it's one of those ones that people talk about, and you don't truly understand how good it is until you watch it.
Mm-hmm. There you go, John. What do you end yours? What do you got? What's your last two?
For everyone playing along, we have currently gone through 8 of my lists, and they have all been from different countries, which means the last two are both Japanese movies. I couldn't help myself. There are just so many good Japanese horror movies out there. And at number two, my number one's Pulse. We're talking about it on the Patreon. It is absolutely depressing. It's scary in like an existential way. It's not scary.
Don't go in expecting true horror, because I was expecting true horror and I was disappointed.
It's a ghost movie, but like it is one that will leave you absolutely traumatized and reflecting on loneliness. And the fact that it could talk about loneliness at the beginning of the internet age and not understand what it was going to become later is impressive. Number two, Pulse is 2001 by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. Mm-hmm. Number two, Hausu, however you want to, whichever words you want to use. 1977.
The Criterion Collection people love this movie.
Nobuhiko Obayashi. This is one of the wildest movies I have ever seen in my entire life. I sat down expecting like this traditional ghost movie. This movie tagline reads like a traditional haunted house movie. It says, a schoolgirl and 6 of her classmates travel to her aunt's country home, which turns out to be haunted.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the most creative movies I've ever seen. The direction in this movie is unhinged. It's wild. They use collage for the backgrounds. It comes off, there are like these like soapy moments in it. The character names are just like archetypes. They aren't actual names. You have fantasy, gorgeous, prof, kung fu. Like these character names are absolutely ridiculous. And it kind of lands in that like horror comedy range of things. But I watched this movie for the first time 2 weeks ago and immediately knew this was one of my favorite movies of all time.
I've heard nothing but great things about this movie.
It's such a wild ride. It is. Is it like terribly scary? I wouldn't say so, but it definitely has those horror elements in like the haunted house aspect. And this is unlike any haunted house movie you've ever seen. It almost comes off more like, it almost has like goosebump vibes to it, the way it presents this haunted house, right? It's really absurd. It's directed so differently than any other movie you've ever seen. And it's just fun. This is the type of movie you should really sit down with a group of friends to watch, because they will all have a hoot doing so.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check that one out. Yeah, that's been on my list for a while. Criterion always puts that one up, and you know, people talk about it all the time because that's where it really became more popular again. Maybe the next 50% off day, I'll have to take a shot on that one.
Yeah, definitely. It's also short. It's like an hour and a half. Horror movies.
That's always nice. I love that. Horror. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's run through these one more time. I guess I'll go first since you just did yours. So I go, come on, list, come back around. I go Goodnight Mommy at number 10, number 9, Raw, number 8, The Devil's Backbone, number 7, The Platform, number 6, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, number 5, Funny Games, number 4, Let the Right One In, number 3, Diabolique, number 2, Audition, and number 1, The Orphanage.
And I have number 10, Vli, number 9, Deep Red, number 8, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, number 7, A Tale of Two Sisters, number 6, The Orphanage, number 5, Nosferatu, The Vampire, number 4, Ringu, 3, Let the Right One In, 2, House, and 1, Pulse.
Cool. There you go. Make sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel. Let us know your favorite non-English horror movies. Enjoy the rest of spooky season. We'll be back in November. John, what was our next topic supposed to be? I forget. What did we determine for the first week?
Well, we figured November is pretty big. We have a double feed. We have like our new our Barbenheimer in November when Gladiator 2 and Wicked come out on the same day.
Oh, that's right.
So I don't think we decided which one of those two categories we were covering first.
What were the two categories? It was musicals and...
It was movie musicals and top 10 Ridley Scott movies.
Oh, that's right. Okay, we'll have to figure that out. So those are going to be the next two things we do. So stay tuned for that. The next episode will be on November 4th. So stay tuned. And yeah, that's it. That's what we got. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And we'll see you next time.